I'm not from Texas. There we go. I have nothing to disclose, like most of us up here. The overall goal of this session was to talk about the implementation of SBIRT kinds of programs into real-world healthcare settings. This talk's going to be a little bit different. I'm going to talk about SBIRT implementation in a non-medical college setting and with a non-traditional college population. I'm from the University of Texas at El Paso, and we're located about a quarter mile from the U.S.-Mexico border at the nearest point. UTEP is also a commuter school that mirrors the local population. El Paso County is 81% Hispanic and one of the fifth poorest region in the nation. UTEP's a school of about 20,000 students, a mix of full and part-time. But about 83% of our students reside in El Paso County. And about 9% in Mexico. So the ethnic makeup of UTEP is strongly Hispanic, with about 74% of our students being Hispanic. Another 11% being international, and that's a little misleading because about most of them, 80% of the internationals are from Mexico. They commute across the border to go to school. 11% white non-Hispanic and 3% black and non-Hispanic and some others. The other thing about our campus is most of our students are low to middle class. I just got an estimate in my email finally from our Center for Institutional Research. About 44% of our last graduating class at one time during their studies fell below the federal poverty line. So there are demographic implications of this for SBI and SBIRT implementation. First of all, most UTEP students live off campus. Therefore, they use the local health care facilities and clinics and hospitals. They tend not to use the student health center for primary care. So a clinic-based SBI program would really have limited reach in a campus like UTEP. Also, most UTEP students drink off campus, and by off campus, sometimes far away from campus. I guess the upside of this for administrators is that campus drunkenness and related problems are pretty small concern because it's not a residential campus. However, with our students, drinking and driving is a bigger issue than you might see at other more traditional college settings. And again, most UTEP students are Hispanic or Mexican, national, so SBI implementation needs to be culturally competent. And although we do see use of other drugs, alcohol is clearly the drug of choice with our students, primarily for a number of reasons, including cultural acceptance and socioeconomics and affordability. So our intervention does focus heavily on alcohol use. The program we follow is a little bit different than the ones we've heard before. We follow the basics model on the UTEP campus. This is brief alcohol screening intervention for college students. This is also a SAMHSA model program. Key components of our program are very similar to the other ones we've heard. We have screening, assessment. We have a psychoeducational session as well. We do personalized feedback. We maintain the spirit of motivational interviewing. And we also have retention and follow-up for monitoring. Now, in adapting our program, this is a very different setting. But our philosophy was, when we started this, was to adapt as little as possible from the basics model in order to maintain program fidelity. Our assumption is that the same general factors that influence student drinking everywhere, attitudes, expectancies, myths, all of that sort of stuff, also influence UTEP college students. The content of some of those beliefs may vary, but not the direction of influence. So the adaptations we did to our program reflected two concerns. One, that UTEP is largely a commuter school, and the second, that we have a large Hispanic enrollment. Well, in the screening process, the screening process is the means for identifying your target population, that third or so of folks who are drinking at levels that are putting them at risk. Because we are a commuter school, we have to have a large screening and outreach component. We can't wait for folks to come into the student health center with bumps and bruises from their last drunken binge. So we have to go out and find them. And at UTEP, we've screened over 9,000 students in the last 3 years. We focus on multiple sites, but largely in some of the larger classrooms where there are lots of freshmen and sophomores, hoping to get them early in their college career. And we have to be flexible and persistent regarding scheduling, because they are commuters and they spend most of their time away from campus. And also with the socioeconomic situation, many of our students work and work away from campus as well. So getting them in can be something we have to be persistent at. Because we have a large Hispanic enrollment, we've translated all of our screening instruments to accommodate the fairly small percentage of students who do prefer to fill out those sorts of things, in Spanish being their primary language. The assessment process for a basics-based intervention involves the completion of instruments to assess consumption patterns and things like that in order to provide personalized feedback. Because we are a commuter school, the basics model, which can be done in one, two, or three sessions, we merge the assessment process with the intervention so that we have one session. And that session is fairly long compared to some of the other models we've heard about today. Typically, the assessment and intervention process takes an hour and a half to 2 hours. Because of, our large Hispanic enrollment, we have translated our assessment instruments as well to Spanish for those who prefer it. We offer a psychoeducational session. We spend a little bit more time with them, and in part we do so because we don't have quite the teachable moment that people working in healthcare settings have. So we feel we have to develop that a little bit when we work with folks. And so we provide a psychoeducational session as part of the intervention. This is a didactic, interactive presentation covering a bunch of the kind of the main topics that drive alcohol use, tolerance, alcohol expectancies, things of that nature. This educational session, because we are a commuter school, one of the things we've done with it from the standard model in the basics manual, is to put in a renewed emphasis and a heavier emphasis on avoiding drunken driving, that being a primary concern with our students. Because we have a large Hispanic enrollment, our interventions are conducted by people who resemble the population. 90% of our staff is Hispanic, but also in their mode of dress and presentation. We heard a little bit about going to a peer health educator model. Our intervention folks are also, we call them peer facilitators, and they try to look like the population from which our clientele are coming from. Some of the content of the psychoeducation has been modified to fit local culture. So we have this wonderful stew called Menudo. It's not a rock band of any kind. And apparently this stuff can cure everything, including hangovers. That's one of our cultural myths. The feedback aspects of it, again, we maintain fidelity to the standard aspects of feedback. But one of the things we've done, because we're a commuter school, there's no real modification to this. But because of our large Hispanic enrollment, we use local drinking norms rather than U.S. college students. Having close to 85-90% Hispanic or Mexican enrollment at UTEP, students don't feel like the U.S. student population characterizes them. So we use local norms rather than general norms for U.S. college students. We also do a couple of things that reflect some local concerns about drinking and health-related stuff. For example, we emphasize the caloric consequences of current consumption patterns and financial costs of them. So this is a portion of a feedback form that we use. And this person, in a typical week, this guy really had a rough week. He consumed 72,093 calories, and that's about 40.5 donuts in rough equivalents and cans of soda. Could have gained two pounds this week. We also talk about financial costs, roughly estimating out how much you would have spent I think this is during the year. So you could have, with the money you spent on alcohol, you could have bought 310 romantic dinners for two, so among other things. We also follow the spirit of motivational interviewing, which is an interaction style that capitalizes on ambivalence about change, uses open-ended questioning to solve problems. And I just put this in here, we tried to maintain program fidelity. So we don't change aspects just because we may look a little different or be in a different place or have a different kind of student. So we stick with the motivational interviewing style and approach. Retention and follow-up is a little bit of a challenge for us, again, because we're a commuter school. We've done some follow-ups by phone. We keep detailed tracking records so we can find people. Having students who are low to middle income, they tend to not pay their cell phone bills occasionally, and so their cell phone numbers can change frequently. But being commuters, we can often find them through their parents and things of that nature, other family members. And we've made no changes just because of the large Hispanic enrollment. We think we've had tremendous success with our program. This is a graph of two cohorts who've gone through our program. I have their baseline data at assessment. These are audit scores. We take anyone who scores 8 or above as eligible for this. These are audit scores at assessment before the intervention, 6 months after the 1.5 to 2 hour session, and then 12 months. I have only the data for our year one cohort. I didn't have time to get our year two cohort together. But we see almost a 50% drop in audit scores at 6 months, a trend that continues downward at 12 months. And roughly at 6 months, we've calalculated about 66% of our people who screen positive, who are eligible for our program, would no longer be eligible at 6 months. They may not have a zero of an audit score, but their audit score is low enough such that we would say, you're doing okay, we don't need to intervene with you. So we're very happy with our outcome numbers. Anyway, what conclusions can we make? Adaptations to programs to fit specific situations need to be made. To have a program that is credible and relevant to your local population and culture and the circumstances in which they live and work and go to school. However, we believe such adaptations need to balance those concerns with maintaining program fidelity. And so we've worked very hard to keep our program true to the basics model as much as possible, but allowing for the fact that we are a commuter school with a large Hispanic enrollment. And our bias has been, you know, if it comes to making a change or to keep something the same, our bias has always been to stick to the program the way it was designed. And I think our data, our support, well, it's hard to know. We don't know what would have happened if we'd made the changes. But our outcomes data do suggest that was probably at least a reasonable decision to make. So I have thanks to a lot of the folks who've participated in this project over the years that we've been doing it. So I think that's it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe, and I want to give you credit for that creative epidemiology, those slides. That was very good.